It is the 2023 Writers Family Reunion, sponsored by Writespace. It is an absolute pleasure and privilege to welcome Irena Lara Silva to our podcast this morning. Effing Shakespeare and Dear Sirs, sponsored by Bloomsday Literary. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
We're thrilled to get to talk about your distinguished career. Silva is the 2024 Texas Poet Laureate. She's been inducted into the Texas Institute of Letters and has been writing her whole life. She's a member of the Macondo Workshop and an inaugural Canto Mundo Fellow, which serves to create, document, and celebrate Latinx poetry. She is the recipient of numerous recognitions, including a Tasajillo Writers Grant, which we were talking about, that wonderful space where they host writers and serve writing in all the ways. All of that, and what strikes me most about your career, is not just all the places where you've been recognized and the outlets where your work has been featured, but the way that your work serves as a connector in the community. Hosting festivals, your work's been selected for national book clubs, the Macondo Foundation, all of that serves to make way for others to explore and connect with each other, which is a thing that we at Bloomsday love about you. We're so lucky to get to spend some time with you today, and I will stop talking so that we can hear from you. I'd love to start by asking you about that community work. Maybe you could talk a little bit about your activism. I feel like writing can be a solitary pursuit, but in an interior pursuit. But what's evident in your work is your dedication to reaching out and clasping hands with one another to make sense of our place among a community. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, writing is, most of the time, and in the when the most effort is applied, it is solitary time. I don't think I view writing as a solitary practice. It almost doesn't make sense to me to think of it at the solitary or individual level. Partly because the big lesson I learned after my first book was that you think you write for yourself. You think you write for self-expression, for dealing with your emotions, for, you know, all these different things. But what you're actually, or for me, what I found out, that what I was actually doing was I wanted to, with a book, create a space for other people to see themselves reflected, not just in terms of being represented, but, you know, as I tell people, there are stories that you can tell your best friends, your family, people you meet, perfect strangers, but that doesn't mean that necessarily that there's always a space to talk about the things that are very important to us, the things that are vital to our lives, the things that are plaguing us, you know, the thoughts at night. Like, there's no space to do that sometimes. You can't be with a friend at a cafe and suddenly, you know, tell them I'm afraid of my mortality and, like, have that while you're trying to have tiramisu and, an espresso. So, so sometimes with a book, it creates a space that's not available anywhere else. And so, yes, at that point you are solitary and you are alone with the page. But the beauty of creating community, the beauty of publishing, the beauty of getting your work out there is that then there are other people who can come across this and say, I have felt this too. I know this as well. And you create a space for discussion and for dialogue. And that's been true whether it's about depression, grief, mortality, the body, illness, the border, politics, whatever it is, there's spaces that you can go on the page where you can then connect with other people. And so that's, so if you view writing in that way first, then you also have to think about the fact that the people that are, a lot of the times, the people that are most closely going to read you are going to be other writers and poets. And, you know, I remember telling people a long time ago, when I come into a room of writers, I don't want to be like, that's my enemy, that's my nemesis, that's my, you know, I want to walk into a room of writers and think, this is a group of friends. This is a group of people that I can talk to. This is, you know, these are the people, and it's been true that those are the people that have been in my life for decades, you know, at this point. And I assume they're going to be there until, you know, until I die.
Very good. How are you so prolific? I expected to find a lot of poetry, which I did. as you're the Texas State Poet Laureate. But then I find that you have a book of short stories. You have a comic book coming out next year. I think it might be your fourth book coming out also in 2024. Where does this relentless drive come from?
A lot of different places. I actually don't think of myself as prolific, really. Because I will sit there for, you know, I know writers that will sit down and write like 10,000 words that are, you know, going to go. I will sit there for 3 hours and work on six sentences. I have spent hours debating a comma with myself and with other people. You know, I don't let anything go until I'm ready. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it too, I mean, I've been writing. I didn't wait to write. I didn't wait till I'm exactly 11 months and 2 days away from retirement. So, but from my full-time job, but I couldn't wait to put it off till later. Like I had to do it. And the more that I think about it, the more it was with as many pressures as I was under working multiple jobs and being the primary caregiver for my brother and dealing with my own health issues. I don't know how I would have made it through any of that if I hadn't also been writing. I think when I was very young, writing was an escape. There was a lot of violence and different kinds of abuse when I was growing up, poverty and work and whatever else. And then as I got older, it was different ways to, writing kept changing. Its role in my life kept changing. But I really think the last couple decades, I wouldn't have made it through if I hadn't been writing.
So I'm not hearing discipline, I'm hearing it's a need for you.
It was a need, and I want to say probably in the last 5 years, it changed again. Mm-hmm. From need to, actually I do a workshop called Forget Discipline. Because I hate the idea of discipline.
I hate the word. Yeah.
I hate
yeah.
words like schedule, outline, word count. Like I hate those things. And I'm like, you know, during the times when I was working multiple jobs and on the bus or at the store or at the pharmacy or at a doctor's appointment with my brother, all these different things, it wasn't about being angry that I didn't have time to write. What I did instead was I sharpened my hunger to write so that when the opportunity came, I would take it. And so it was, I want to do this. I'm hungry to do this. And if I've got 15 minutes of attention and space, I will spend them writing because I want to. Yeah. Not because it's discipline, not because I'm expected to every day or whatever, but because I want to.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much more energy and joy and desire and hunger than there is in discipline and shame. And, you know, because with so many people, that's the huge thing you have to get over, the shame of what you didn't do and what successes you haven't had and where you haven't been and all of that. And so why deal with any of that? Just let it all go. Stop fighting yourself and get to the page.
Yeah. I was just about to say, I wish every writer could hear that piece. And I hope you, if you're a writer, I hope you do. And now I'm taking a moment to hear it myself because I think it's really important. Mm. We were talking before we got on the mics about naps. And I feel like if you let go of some of that hardship or discipline or, you know, the schedule or what you quote unquote should be doing every day to pursue writing and make room for joy, like you said.
Well, and the other thing too, the thing that gets me is, you know, people will, let's say they manage to grab a couple hours, go to a cafe, spend it writing, have their little coffee, beautiful sunlight coming in through the window. They're writing away and they're having this beautiful afternoon. And then after they're done, they look at what they wrote and they're like, well, this is a bunch of crap. Mm-hmm. And now they've crapped all over their beautiful afternoon and the hours that they got to be away. I'm like, there's this brand new thing that was just made. And they've just already poured all of this weight of expectation and this desire to be perfect. And it's like, enjoy the fact that you had a free afternoon. Enjoy the fact that you had a beautiful coffee. Enjoy the fact that you spent several hours creating.
Yeah.
And now you have something to work with, yeah. which you didn't have before.
Yeah.
So why not just live in the joy of it?
Mm? So good. So good. I'm going to ask you, Eaters of the Flowers comes out in 2024 with the name of your press.
Saddle Road Press.
Saddle Road. That's right. It's a intensely personal collection. Among other things, it's, quote, being called reliably candid and fearless. I'm wondering, can you share some of your process of that, writing something deeply personal? And I was doing your research, I came across the poem that you wrote in the wake of the Uvalde massacre. These are things that you don't shy away from talking about in your poetry. But now that I've met you, I find you an intensely joyful person, and you have so much energy and space for good things. Can you talk about that process when you are grieving and writing?
For the Eaters of Flowers in particular, that was a, you know, if I have to point to the biggest change, the sharpest change, would be the death of my brother after taking care of him for 19 years as an adult. Mm-hmm. The only way I can explain it to people is that I had so based my schedule around his needs that when he passed, I did not know when to eat or when to sleep. I mean, I had to start from, I don't know, zero doesn't explain what that space was. Mm. There was such a hole in my life, in my home, in every possible way. And I had to figure out how to rebuild and shape a life that wasn't centered around him. And it wasn't just that he was, you know, my brother and he was my best friend and my adopted son, but he was also the person who, in my entire life, he is the person who believed in me the most. And he was there every single book, every single angsty conversation, every single article, every single story. He was for a very long time my first reader. He was my sharpest critic. But he was a critic in a way that no one else has ever succeeded at being. He made me have calluses as a writer. I think the worst criticism he ever gave me when I was working on my second short story collection, he read the first story and he said, "This sounds like the diet soda version of your first collection." And I was like, "What?" And he would tell me things like that. But then he would go and make suggestions, and I would think, he understands my story better than I do. And then also, you know, there are so, the more that, you know, the more time I live, the more I realize that so few people ever get someone in their corner like that. He was in my corner 350%. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the last thing that I read to him, I used to read to him towards the last couple of years because he couldn't read anymore. But the last thing that he asked me to read to him was a few of my short stories. Mm. So that's what I was reading to him when he was in the hospital, you know, already in hospice care. But, you know, he fiercely believed in me. So anyway, so then after he passed, everything just kind of went, everything was gone. And so it was the process of rebuilding, and it took several months to even get to the point where I could put pen to paper. And then I wrote Eaters of Flowers in 2 months, poems almost on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. I think the reason I was able to write it was because all of my poetry up to that point had been dealing with whatever the most difficult issue in my life was, whatever I was most trying to puzzle out. When I wrote Blood Sugar Canto, there was so much fear in me and everything about diabetes and the community and family. Like, I had to write it to figure it out for myself. With The Eaters of Flowers, I had to figure, I wrote that book to figure out not just grief, but how to rebuild life after that. So it is, the book is about him and it is about his loss, but for the most part, it's about me and how you deal with that. But then also how we tend to think of grief as something to avoid. And I forget what meme I saw, where it's something about, you know, grief is proof that you had something that was so precious that it deserves its grief. And so that's what it comes back down to. I mean, I will never for the rest of my life not think about my brother. You know, he was such a huge part of my coming into my own as a writer.
Yeah.
That he will always be a part of anything I write.
Yeah.
the comic book that I'm writing. I actually said yes to it because he loves comic books. Mm. And I thought I can make this the heroine of the comic book. She's going to have a little big brother the way I did. Yeah. You know, and so he's in that comic book. He's in that story.
Yeah.
And so, you know, everything feeds everything. But it is also about, you know, how do we find, if we're going to appreciate the love that resulted in grief, if I'm going to write about pain or loss or anything like that, well then, you know, what is the point of surviving all these things? What's the point of transforming all things if it's not to live a joyous life? If it's not to find loves and friends and work worth doing and, you know, and to appreciate our creativity? You know, what is the point if it's all suffering and pain and shame and, you know, schedules and outlines and discipline? Like, there's no point. There's no point to it.
Right. Well, I'm so grateful for your time this morning, for your honesty, for your writing in the world. Thank you so much. This has been one of my favorite conversations. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Effing Shakespeare is a production of Bloomsday Literary, hosted by Kate Martin Williams and Jessica Cole, and produced by me, Fu Lu.
Do you want to grab that door too? Because I still hear the outside, which we thought were the ghosts in the machine.
Some people get into an acoustic space and they just lose their minds. Like, let me yell.
That's okay. Just pause for one second.
You made fun of the ghosts.
We did. And who else would it be sponsored by? Whataburger? Who knows? We are so excited to be here this morning.